Blog Talk Radio.
The following content may not be suitable for all audiences. Viewer discretion is advised.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. You're listening to the Radio Infidel Show live from the USA, bringing you the truth, the facts, and the light. Now, here's your host.
Well, good evening and welcome to the Radio Infidel Show this May 10th, 2021, live from the USA. Jay here from the Sunshine State. Join us, as always, our executive producer, Pepe Farms, our military and security expert, D126, and looky here, BP is alive. Welcome, General. Pepe, my friend, good evening to you.
Greetings and salutations, Jay, on this day of connections anniversaries. Today is the anniversary of both the Golden Spike, celebrating the first American Intercontinental Railroad, and the USS Nautilus completing the first underwater circumnavigation of the world. Quite a contrast with our new world normal order of social distancing and travel restrictions, isn't it?
Indeed. And, you know, that's what I get for looking at a post on Gab from a general. So, anyway, BP, welcome back. Good evening, sir. How's your week?
Excellent week. I got to recover from my allergy, whatever that was. So it's good to be back. Hope everybody's doing well.
Well, the allergies have not quite let up here in Florida. It's rained for 2 days, so, you know, it's just trickling down.
I told him, Jay, it was exposure to vaccinated people that did it to him, but he doesn't believe me.
D-Man G6, good evening, bud. How was your week?
Oh, you know, Jay, I'm still on the correct side of the lawn. There's just so much crap to go through. Let's just get right into it, man.
I think we have to say that every damn week that we're on. All right, to open tonight, we're going to push headlines a little back and have a discussion. Now, I tasked the team to give us the two of the biggest threats to America they think are and why. Now, we have not pre-discussed any of this, so we'll just roll with it. I'll do my last. Pepe, go ahead. Unmute, Pepe.
Don't you hate when you do that? The greatest threat is as it always has been, the mute button and ourselves. As I've tried to impress before, none of this is new. The only new thing in our lifetimes is the illusion of self-rule and the facade of freedom. Almost within living memory, being subjugated was the norm. You owned nothing and liked it. This world was irrelevant and fleeting. Only the afterlife really mattered. The aristocracy had a good thing going, and the same mother hen type still want to be in that control. Remember, Fauci and Gates are being compassionate. Their goal is to save 500 million people, for goodness sake. Who else in the history of mankind could lay claim to such an accolade? They just have to kill 7.5 billion people to do it. You know, omelets and all that. The enemy is our collective ability to listen to the rich and powerful discuss their plans to kill us and all shrug it off as being unrealistic. The Dr. Evil stereotype isn't just a plot device. Evil people always spend an extraordinary amount of time explaining exactly how the sharks with freaking laser beams are going to kill you all is just what they do.
Okay, all right, Demon.
Well, Jay, this truth biscuit's going to be hard, dry, and difficult to pass. Pepe's right, man. We are our own biggest threat because we see the disaster unfolding, and yet most of us are still sitting on our couches, wringing our hands, and waiting for Trump to come save us. Ladies and gentlemen, that's not going to happen. Nobody's coming to save us. I've explained this over and over for almost a year now. Your instructions are in the Declaration of Independence. Your motivational material is Norman Rockwell's paintings, and your proofs of concept are the Battle of Athens, Tennessee, August 1946, and most recently the Vail, Arizona School Board purge conducted by the citizens of that fine town. We need to get up, get local, and get to it. Now, get up and get to it.
Right on, right on. BP, what's your thoughts on the two biggest threats of America?
I totally agree with Beppe and Demon. It is definitely us. We are our biggest enemies. The lack of facts, truth, the media, and the the ability of that particular side of society to put blinders on everybody else with destructionary platforms such as Black Lives Matter.
Transvestite governors.
Transvestite governors. Yeah.
Well, there,
so
yeah, there is that.
I agree with Demon. We have to follow the Constitution. It's better to be prepared for war than not be prepared at all.
All right, all right. So, well, I went with the libs, Wichita Kills, BLM, Antifa, and this bullshit administration, which I guess rolls up into one.
Yes, indeed.
So it's not, I don't really have to. You know, the China threat, I think any other country is a threat. You know, if we're going to go with a country, I would say China over Russia.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't really matter. It's our own internal self-enemies that are doing it to us. It doesn't, it's irrelevant what country they team up with to get it done. If it wasn't China, it would have been Russia. If it wasn't Russia, it would have been Ukraine. If it wasn't Ukraine, it would have been North Korea or Vietnam.
What's the old saying, from within?
Yeah, first tend to your own yard.
Yeah, we can't seem to get that one. Apparently, we're a long way away from that one.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Let's get an update on the pastor from Canada, Arthur Palowski, Pepe. Unmute, Pepe. Did we lose him?
Pepe, are you there?
Pepe, are you there?
Well, since we got to keep going here, Arthur Palowski, the pastor of the Cave of Adullam Church in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, was swarmed by police and apparently a SWAT team as well, and arrested after holding it an illegal, air quotes, church service on Saturday and for inciting people to attend church. Isn't that the job description for a pastor, Jay, or am I missing something here?
Well, the last I knew, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's insane. Palowski called into the Alex Jones Show and some other news outlets from jail detailing the sleep deprivation and other torture techniques he's enduring without being allowed to contact his lawyer. It's fucking Chi-Com bastards. This Canada's gone completely insane, and this is bizarre. I used to go to Canada on my library card back in the 80s to have lunch with friends.
Yeah, now they don't have the First Amendment as we have it.
No, they do not. That's true.
And there we go. Sorry about that, guys.
That's all right. That's all right. Demon has it covered. He gave the update on the Chi-Com bastards.
Demon to the rescue.
Okay, guys. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Let's get to some headlines. So let's start off with a shaking my fucking head one. ASB, AOC, please, Pepe.
So much, Chairwoman, Madam Chairwoman. That was just a lot, and I think it's really important that it's addressed very directly right now and in this moment. First and foremost, I don't want to hear a single person on this committee or outside of this committee talk about valuing life when they continue to uphold the death penalty, when they continue to support policies that disproportionately incarcerate and lead to the deaths of Black men and people throughout this country, and uphold an absolutely unjust medical system that exists for profit that allows people to die because they can't afford to live. In addition to that, if we want to talk about Planned Parenthood, let's talk about how many lives Planned Parenthood has saved and how many babies have been born because of the prenatal care provided by Planned Parenthood. And if you don't believe it, and if you've never met a Planned Parenthood baby, I'm happy to let you know that I am one, and that my mother received and relied on prenatal care from Planned Parenthood when she was pregnant with me. And so if we're concerned about life, we don't get to talk about anyone else who's not concerned about the full spectrum of that when we are upholding policies that kill people.
Oh, man. I mean, have you guys heard this? before show? Did you see it out there?
Yeah, I had seen it, and it was just so much word salad, it made my head hurt. I mean, I love it when the memes write themselves, and in this case, literally. But AOC can blow it out her ass. We found out that hospitals and even doctor visit doctors are automatically instituting do not resuscitates based on their interpretation of whether or not the patient would be better off dead. I mean, death panels are here, y'all.
Well, wow. I could have only wished that she was a Planned Parenthood baby, if you get my drift.
Exactly.
Go ahead, buddy.
Yeah, I agree. She's fairly annoying, and it is definitely a verbal salad with her. If you can make out anything she says, it is pretty incredible. It's painful for me just to listen to her.
She's definitely a meme maker.
Oh yeah. And that's one of the reasons she got elected. For her to be mean to everybody else in Congress.
She's got half a billion Indians wanted her to show Bob's, though, so she's got quite the fan base.
Go ahead.
Oh, my God. Black Pepper, you are truly a gentle giant, man, because your words were far kinder than any I have for this thing. I can't even begin to articulate how much I hate AOC. She's a joke. She's pathetic. Ladies and gentlemen, we have an idiot bartender who is not even a very good one by all accounts as a member of Congress. That's the state of the United States of America today. Wrap your head around that. To quote Wayne from freaking Letterkenny, marinate on that for a minute.
Yeah, absolutely.
The juices are flowing.
I think she's a few brain cells short. But anyway, all right, guys, in fuck you pal news, Fauci, it is conceivable that mask wearing could become permanent. Fauci thinks mask wearing will become a permanent feature for Americans to prevent the spread of the flu. Anthony Fauci, who's been the director of the National Institute of whatever the fuck he does since 1984, told Chuck Todd on NBC Meet the Press that mask wearing could become a permanent feature of fall weather and questionably claimed that the flu was almost totally eradicated by wearing the mask for COVID-19. Pepe.
Well, Jay, Fauci released another study. It suggests that a boot stamping on a human face forever may help prevent the spread of coronavirus. But I thought the boots were made for walking.
BP, go ahead.
I thought so too, but evidently not. That's why you have that soft gum sole on some of them to help with your facial displays on the ground while they're stepping on your head.
Oh, goodness.
Where did this little maniac Dago Alf come from anyway? Who is this little troll? This guy's got to be put down. He's I've never seen somebody more in need of a dirt nap in my life, and he can sleep on his arm for all I care.
Well, after his residency in 68, he joined the NIH and the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, which he's run since 1984.
God, how appropriate, 1984.
Yeah, right? Yep. I was going.
He joined that department in 1972, just before and just in time to lead the experimental swine flu vaccine that killed 25 people.
Yeah. A true American piece of shit, right up there with the best of them. Okay, guys, and no shit news. In a recent poll of Texans living in District 21, 91.7% of the respondents indicated they believe child transgender surgeries and drugs should be made illegal. The poll was released even as Governor Greg Abbott, Texas House Speaker Dade Phelan, and Texas Republican Dustin Burroughs, all Republicans, by the way, are stalling legislation to ban such surgeries and common drugs for minors in the state. According to the poll, 91.7% of parents believe that Texas politicians should pass legislation to ban children from becoming transgendered with drug or surgical procedures. Similarly, 89.4% of parents believe that parents, psychologists, and medical doctors should not be allowed to alter a child's body with surgery or drugs for transitioning purposes. Additionally, 92.1% of the respondents believe that biological males should not be allowed to compete in girls' sports. An overwhelming 91.6% of the respondents said that it is not okay for Texas to have a speaker that supports chemical castration of children. Guys, why would any of them be stalling this, Pepe?
Well, not to perpetuate a stereotype or anything, Jay, but in my never-to-be-humble opinion, it's because they're a bunch of fucking kid diddlers. Pardon my French. Wait. Let me take that back. Let me use my new insult generator. It's because they are a bunch of rotten rod hamsters.
Rotten rod hamsters. I like that.
God, BP, go for my choke.
Damn. That was pretty funny, Pepe. I agree. I mean, the evilness of it all is just fascinating to me that people would stoop to as far as they do to undermine the overall happiness of the world. But nothing surprises me anymore, I guess, Jay.
Yeah, true.
You know, Demon, I must have done a Rip Van Winkle. When all this shit crept in, who in any fucking right mind would think it would be okay to transgender a child?
Jay, I've got a solution for those male members of the Texas legislature who think this is okay. I think we need to castrate them, and I've got a handy 4-pound sledgehammer sitting right here, man.
I kind of knew where you were going with it. All right, well, we got more no shit news. Jim Psaki admits Biden taking impromptu reporter questions is not something we recommend. No shit. Biden's press secretary also claimed that she often says to the president, don't take questions. Jim Psaki admitted in a CNN podcast published Thursday that President Joe Biden taking impromptu questions from reporters is not something we recommend. Psaki made the admission while being interviewed by CNN senior political commentator Dave Axelrod on his podcast, The X-Files, and claimed that she at times even tells Mr. Biden not to take questions from reporters. For fuck's sake, Pepe.
Well, no wonder she thinks it's time, quote, for somebody else to have this job and is quitting, quote, in a year from now because she doesn't want to, quote, miss moments. Give me a break.
BP, go ahead.
Oh, you, BP.
I'm sorry. I'm laughing so hard. That was great. Once again. Pepe, you hit it right on the head.
Oh, Demon, what? Just go ahead.
I got to tell you, Jay, the one thing I'm enjoying about Jen Psaki is watching the life drain out of her face. She does this job.
Biden was trying to suck her brains out?
I'm talking about you can see the soul being sucked out of this woman, what little she had left. As time goes on, she gets more and more gaunt. She gets more and more haggard looking. And it's just so telling what's going on in that office there, man.
Well, she's just wondering when her selfies with Hunter Biden are going to come out.
Or when she gets Arkansas-ed.
Yep.
Oh, Lord God, guys. Okay. I'm going to try to get this one out. Baltimore's top prosecutor requested a federal investigation into a Fox affiliate for being critical of her and having ties to Fox News, Tucker Carlson, tonight. Among other allegations, Baltimore City State Attorney Marilyn Mosby's office accused Fox affiliate WBFF-TV of dishonesty, bias, and racism in a letter to the Federal Communications Commission on Wednesday. Mosby's office argued that the language included in the Atlas carriage of the city attorney is inflammatory against safety of an elected official and therefore violates federal statute. There appears to be an intentional crusade against State Attorney Mosby, which, given today's political charge and divisive environment, is extremely dangerous. Baltimore City State's Attorney Office Communications Director Zai Richardson wrote in the letter addressed to acting FCC Chairwoman Jessica Rosenworld. Quote, I have noted that the news coverage of the WBFF persistently follows a disconcerting and dangerous pattern, beginning with a slanted, rigged, misleading, or inflammatory headline, followed by a conspiracy theory, and supported with guest commentary from disgruntled ex-employees or political opponents that lend false credibility to their biased coverage or omission of facts, she continued. I mean, God, if this claim is true, CNN, CNN, be it bullshit, ABC, NBC, have been guilty of this for five fucking years, Pepe.
Yeah, I know, right? This is the U.S. Government Media Truth Commission in full swing. Did you know the COVID-19 Consumer Protection Act of the 2021 Consolidated Appropriations Act makes any deceptive act or practice in or affecting commerce associated with the treatment, cure, prevention, mitigation, or diagnosis of COVID or a government benefit related to COVID illegal? So get used to more of this kind of thing and wait for the International Trusted News Initiative. It's not far behind.
Sad but true. BP, go ahead, buddy.
Yeah, we should all get ready for that. I mean, that's something that, again, that they've been planning on, and they're just willing to implement it as soon as they see a weakness.
Yeah, I just can't.
Well, I'm gonna steal Jen Psaki's line and circle back here, Jay.
I'd like to go
to the Baltimore City State Attorney's Office Communication Director Zai Richardson, ZY Richardson. I'd like to know if his full name is Zyklon B. Richardson.
Right. Well, and Hank in chat is pointing out it's. Her name is Jen Psaki, just so you have that straight.
My bad. Thank you. Thank you for circling back to that.
Yeah. Okay, guys. Norway's Institute of Public Health recommends government ban J&J AstraZeneca vaccines due to side effects. Quoting, we do not recommend the vaccines be used in the national vaccine program due to the serious side effects that it has seen. Pepe?
Well, that's a good start. Now do Pfizer and the rest, especially since the J&J was the least deadly. But, you know, the NIH co-owns the patent on the Moderna vaccine, so I'm sure that will be the last man standing, so to speak. At five deaths, the FDA mandates a black box warning that a product may cause death, and at 50 deaths, that product is removed from the market permanently. The 1976 swine flu experimental vaccine deployment to 55 million Americans was halted after just 25 deaths, and now we're up to thousands.
Yeah. BP, go ahead, buddy.
Yes, that is true. I mean, the numbers speak for themselves, even though they keep skewing the numbers. And if you don't pay attention, you don't know that they're skewing the numbers. So,
yep,
I mean,
they're doing it even more. More on that later.
Yeah,
we got something coming up on that. You're going to listen to that one. Damon, go ahead, bud.
Well, part of the problem is there's a 24/7 media campaign, a blitz out there, telling everybody just how safe the vaccine is, and there's one tear-jerking, hand-wringing, pearl-clutching ad after another of why you need to get vaccinated, folks. It's very important that you get yourselves vaccinated. But we're up to something like 8,000 deaths now caused by these vaccines. Circling back again, we need to get off our butts and we need to do something about this. This is insane. 8,000 deaths and hundreds of thousands of, quote, side effects, including stroke, Bell's palsy, and God knows what else. Are you freaking kidding me right now?
Right. You know, I was having a conversation the other day with my boss, and he's like, have you got the shot yet? I'm like, what shot? A shot of whiskey? You know, it's not happening. It's not. Look, after all the shit I stuck up my nose in the 80s, if I get that shit, I deserve it.
I know, right?
Well, you probably immunized yourself against it doing all that, Jay.
Don't you get double immunization from all the stuff you took previously?
Something like that, especially if it's up the nose.
Shower.
Yeah, it must be working. Something's working for me. All right, guys, how about that job report? Let's just let old Joe clear it up for you guys. Go ahead, Pepe.
I know there's been a lot of discussion since Friday's report, that people are being paid to stay home rather than go to work. Well, we don't see much evidence of that. That is a major factor. We don't see that. Look, it's easy to say the line has been, because of the generous unemployment benefits, that it's a major factor in labor shortages.
Okay, Pepe, one more time so we're crystal clear.
All right, here we go.
I know there's been a lot of discussion since Friday's report, that people are being paid to stay home rather than go to work. Well, we don't see much evidence of that. That is a major factor. We don't see that, look, it's easy to say the line has been, because of the generous unemployment benefits, that it's a major factor in labor shortages.
Well, that's easy for you to say, Joe. Now, is everybody cleared up, Pepe?
Crystal, Jay. He's trying to say that labor shortages are not due to people being paid to stay at home. But BP and I were just talking about his jobs hunt. If you make $16 an hour to stay at home, the minimum you can afford to take is much higher than that. Staying at home doesn't cost you gas, wear and tear, eating out, or any of the other expenses associated with being a wage slave. Get the fuck out of here with those 16-an-hour jobs. Starting wage is more like double than that now.
Right, and you know what's going to happen when they make it $15 minimum, then you're going to have the old-timers like me. I want $30 an hour. So,
exactly.
You know,
And they have effectively made the minimum wage $16 an hour by paying people to stay home.
Yeah, absolutely. BP, go ahead, buddy.
And whoops, sorry, my bad. Start over there, BP.
No, I was just going to say that is so true. You have to start off at $16 an hour, as we discussed earlier, that to even bring people out. And now with the increasing gas prices, that's $5 more per hour added on to the 16. So that's 21, plus the added food costs, that's 5 more. So you're looking at 26 minimum before you can even start to talk to anybody with experience in doing any job.
I was driving down Paula Fox the other day and passed the McDonald's. $500 sign-on bonus. Are you out of your mind, Demon?
Yeah, Jay, I am having a real hard time wrapping my head around who they have for economists there. On top of what Black Pepe just threw out there, you've got all the added costs, and there are added costs for the business operators, especially small business operators, when you start jacking up minimum wage like that. There are all kinds of unseen hidden costs. You got the HR stuff, you got the complying with all of these new regulations and everything. That costs money. A lot of it comes in the form of time. And it absolutely will wipe out small businesses. And guess what? That's what it's designed to do. Look at the monetary growth of Amazon, of Costco over the period of the last year. Look how many small businesses. Just here in Michigan, we've had over 3,000 restaurants shut down in Michigan because they cannot keep up with the costs that are being piled on them to deal with all of these new damn regulations, especially the ones that are coming off of China virus. So this is a deliberate sabotage of the entire economy is what it is.
Absolutely, because the business is going to have to – well, first of all, they can't get staff because people are sitting home on their ass. And they're just going to – they're going to be forced to pass the cost on because, you know, it's just incredible what they've done. Speaking of gas prices, in the last 24 hours, gas prices – here in Pensacola went up 10 cents a gallon. What's going on with you guys, Pepe?
Well, I haven't really bought gas since COVID started, so I'm not a good judge of that. How about DP? Have you got any gas around here lately?
Oh, yeah. And I can tell you, it's going up steadily, mainly because of the Colonial gas pipeline, which goes from Texas all the way through the southeast, all the way up until Maryland. So every state is infected.
Well, I go by a gas station every day when I head to work. And last night, it was $2.79 a gallon, and it's $2.89 a gallon today. Dean, what's going on in your area?
Up here in Michigan, we were down below $2 a gallon while Trump was president. And now it's jumped more than a dollar. We're looking at anywhere between $2.99 and $3.50 a gallon up here, like almost instantly. And we haven't even felt the effects of that pipeline shutdown yet. We've got Whitmer shutting down Line 5, which runs between the Upper Peninsula and the Lower Peninsula through the Straits of Mackinac, which is the pipeline's been there for years and years and years, decades. She's shutting that down now, so that's going to drive our costs up even further.
If I read this correct.
As Hank points out in chat, that Mayor Pete is on the case of the Colonial Pipeline, and we're sure he's expert at working with ransomware.
And he's good at working with pipe.
I had to do it, Demon. That's fair.
Well, as a fellow pipe fitter yourself, you know all about it.
Okay.
Oh!
Oh, good Lord. I'm going to have to kill my EP.
Come on, man. What are we talking about? Come on, man. Come on, man.
Come on, man.
Come on, man.
Okay. This is interesting. Now, it's not new because it's been going on forever, but a U.S. Coast Guard cutter fired two volleys of warning shots today as a group of 13 Iranian fast boats sped towards the U.S. Navy vessels in the Persian Gulf, Strait of Hormuz, in what the Pentagon called unsafe and unprofessional maneuvers by the naval arm of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps. It was the second time in 2 weeks, and I did not know this, that a U.S. ship opened fire to warn off vessels of Iranian's paramilitary Revolutionary Guard. The encounters come as the United States and Iran are in indirect talks in Vienna aimed at reviving the 2015 Iran nuclear deal, which the United States left in 2018, as we should have. Asked whether the Revolutionary Guard are trying to pick a fight with the U.S. Navy, Pentagon Press Secretary John Kirby declined to comment on the Iranian intentions. You know, warning shots my ass. I'll go to Demon first since he's our military expert. Demon.
Yeah.
Fucking warning shots.
Hey, this happens actually a lot more than people realize, and it happens all over the world. People love to screw with the U.S. military whenever they get an opportunity. I saw it in Northeast Asia with the Koreans and the Chinese. I saw it in Africa. I've heard of it all over in like the Crimean Sea, those areas, anywhere around the Middle Eastern countries. This does happen a lot more than people realize. So to me, this article being put out there like that is more manipulation of the media and more manipulation of the public. Oh, look at these are the bad guys here. Don't look over there. Don't look over there. Look over here. This is a media manipulation, Jay. These kind of incidents actually happen pretty frequently.
And yeah, we just don't hear about them.
Yep, that's correct.
Yeah, I think.
Well, we've seen how some people drive ships. Sometimes you got to shoot at them just to get their attention.
That's true.
I don't know how common warning shots are in international waters or otherwise current day. It was certainly very common in the past. But in 2018, China fired 6 warning shots at a U.S. Navy plane over the Spratly chain of islands. And just yesterday, the Pope's Libyan Coast Guard ship warning machine-gunned a fishing trawler and wounded a fisherman. So it's definitely not unheard of.
Yeah, it's pretty common.
BP, go ahead, buddy.
It is very much common for our ships to fire on aggressors, and I think we should. I have little to no confidence in the Biden administration negotiating with the Iranians. As we saw with the Obama administration, they got made out like fat cats. And now the news is circulating that John Kerry may have been disclosing information from the Trump administration to the Iranians during the Trump presidency.
Yeah, you
can't confirm.
You can't confirm it.
Yep.
I have a sense that it did go down.
Demon said can 100% is confirmed.
Yeah, 100%. I can confirm that.
Okay, yeah,
I can confirm that through military channels. Absolutely true.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know that piece of shit did that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Another thought. I guess the U.S. Navy is much more likely to shoot at aggressive ships since that, missile carrier got almost sunk
in Yemen?
By a speedboat, in Yemen.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a friend that was stationed on one of its sister ships, and if the explosion had been just slightly in one direction or the other, he wouldn't tell me which way, it would have compromised the nuclear command deck.
Crazy, crazy, crazy time. Okay, guys, now this next audio soundbite is fucking hilarious. It's on YouTube, well, at least for now anyways. But if you listen to it and don't watch the impersonator, go ahead and play audio soundbite, Pelosi, please.
I'd say even if you live alone, I would wear a mask in the house, especially in the shower, because frankly, droplets can make the way through the drain and come up through somebody else's toilet, infecting them with COVID through the anus. Ballpark, in 2 to 5 to 20 years, we can start thinking about considering the idea of pondering the thought of conceptualizing the possibility of maybe, perhaps, reopening, but probably not. I would avoid having any fun whatsoever in the near to far future.
I would say a dead ringer, Pepe.
Oh, yes, not a bad likeness at all. Makes me think of Fauci's latest study in boots.
Yeah. Exactly. Vague over vague statement. So.
Yeah, I'm not sure which Fauci he was impersonating, but I think he did a good job on at least Fauci's A through D. Maybe not E, but definitely F through Z.
The demon, go ahead, buddy.
All I could hear was that old comedy duo who used to phone prank people before there was such a thing as caller ID, the Jerky Boys. The Jerky Boys.
Yeah.
And I wear my mask and mask and my shoes in the shower so I have them so I don't get COVID in my anus.
The Jerky Boys. Wow, that's a blast from the past.
Yeah, I dug deep on that one.
Dude, oh my God, that was Jersey back in the late 80s, man.
Yeah.
Jerky Boys.
Everybody, you guys are showing your age. All right, guys. Pay attention to this next soundbite. Go ahead and roll it, Pepe.
So get this, the CDC just announced that starting on May 14th, they will change how vaccine breakthrough cases are reported. According to a statement on their website, to help maximize the quality of the data collected on cases of greatest clinical and public health importance, it will stop reporting COVID breakthrough infections in vaccinated individuals unless the infection results in hospitalization or death. This comes at a time when thousands of COVID-19 breakthrough cases are being reported in the fully vaccinated. So in other words, we've been including asymptomatic cases in the case count in order to dictate policy that locked you down, bankrupted your business, and drove your Uncle Jerry to suicide. But now that we have the magic vaccine, we no longer concern ourselves with such trivial things as asymptomatic infection. Only the peasants can asymptomatically spread disease. So what's the takeaway from all of this? Well, this means that starting on May 14th, that COVID infections among the vaccinated will drastically decline, while COVID infections among the unvaccinated will continue to steadily rise. All due not to the miracle of vaccines, but to a quick change in reporting protocol. According to the CDC, actual vaccine breakthrough numbers are likely higher than reported as the surveillance system is passive and relies on voluntary reporting from state health departments and may not be complete. In addition, some breakthrough cases will not be identified due to lack of testing. This is particularly true in instances of asymptomatic or mild illness. Couple this with the change in definition of a breakthrough case, and there's really no way to compare infection rates between the unvaccinated and the vaccinated. Because vaccines are to health as the Wright brothers are to aviation. As Alexander Graham Bell is to telecommunications. As Milli Vanilli is to shitty pop music. Nothing but imposters taking credit for work they didn't do.
Oh, gentlemen.
Oh, yes, 100%. As I mentioned, they did the same thing with polio and every other viral disease vaccine success story. They do this every time. As soon as they have a vaccine that they want to claim is successful, they change the reporting criteria.
Yeah, you know, anyway, BP, go ahead, buddy.
That is true, so true. Beppe and I looked at the numbers today. And the numbers from previous months keep increasing, which is really weird. And the numbers from the current months keep decreasing. So I can't figure it out. So I need a second pair of eyes to figure it out. And we're seeing the same thing, manipulation of the numbers. That's their game.
Yeah, absolutely, without a doubt. Demon, go ahead, bud.
Yeah, it's been manipulation of the numbers since the get-go, but I want to address the elephant in the room on that particular soundbite. I want to hear Brooklyn Tina do that one. Fuck out of here.
Exactly. Is that the Cash Me Outside girl?
No, you don't know Brooklyn Tina? Holy cow.
I know.
I'll find you a cut.
I know Brooklyn Tina.
All right, guys. We're going to move on. Here comes facts with Demon 26. Take it away, Demon.
Oh, man, Jay. We're going to go into critical race theory here, and I'm going to go to the American Bar Association and their release on what critical race theory is. And they say in September of 2020, President Trump issued an executive order excluding from federal contracts in a diversity and inclusion training interpreted as containing, quote, divisive concepts, race or sex stereotyping, and race or sex scapegoating. Among the content considered divisive is critical race theory, CRT. In response, the African American Policy Forum, led by legal scholar Kimberly Crenshaw, launched the Truth Be Told, hashtag Truth Be Told campaign to expose the harm that the order poses. Reports indicate that over 300 diversity and inclusion trainings have been canceled as a result of President Trump's order. CRT, says the American Bar Association, is not a diversity and inclusion training, but a practice of integrating race and racism into society that emerged in the legal academy and spread to other fields of scholarship. Crenshaw, who coined the term CRT, notes that CRT is not a noun but a verb. It cannot be confined to a static and narrow definition, but is considered to be an evolving and malleable practice. It critiques how the social construction of a race and institutionalized racism in America perpetuate a racial caste system that relegates people of color to the bottom tiers. Now, this is the most nonsense that I've ever heard in my life. First of all, they say CRT is malleable, which means they could just move the goalposts as they please. Second of all, it postulates that all people who are not white are somehow automatically inferior and need help to get where they are, which is absolutely freaking ridiculous. And I'm from Detroit, ladies and gentlemen. I can tell you right now, the people downtown that I know, they don't need any goddamn help from you. This CRT, this critical race theory, is nothing more than straight up Marxist race war packaged in a pretty bow meant to just absolutely destroy all of the fundamental principles, foundings, and mechanisms of our country. That's all CRT is. It's a blatant Marxist attack on our entire country. It's freaking ridiculous, and I, for one, am furious, and I want to know why nobody is calling out the left for their blatant racism. They're literally saying in this that anybody who is not white is an oppressed minority and is too dumb to handle their own business. And guys, I'm through the roof livid about this. This is freaking ridiculous.
Well, I do know that several states have outlawed the teachers.
Yes. Yes, they have. And it's a growing momentum too.
Pepe, thoughts?
Well, Demon hit the nail right on the head. It's, you know, explicitly an anti-white racism with the caveat that whites can't be racist. I mean, that anyone that isn't white can't be racist and that you can't be racist against white people. So it's the most contorted bit of mindless propaganda ever conceived.
Yeah, absolutely. BP?
Yes. Pepe, you said the right word, propaganda. That's exactly what it is. We spend too much time trying to take a deep dive into people's feelings when people are people, regardless of where you are. If you leave them alone to flourish for themselves, they normally can work their issues out.
Yeah, what was that thing we were looking at today, BP, with the innate ability to sense danger and self-protect?
Yeah.
They found out the way to make people not racist was to use electrical stimulation to shut down the center of the brain that involves self-preservation.
Therapy.
Isn't that convenient? Yep. Let's go all Clockwork Orange here and play some Ludwig von Beethoven.
That's right.
Hey, buddy. He's good for you.
I'll tell you.
The only person out there in the world that I know that needs help like this would maybe be Jay. I'm sorry, Jay. I had to take the cheap shot. He's playing right there on the table, man.
Where's my cane here?
No sandwich for you, buddy.
Damn it.
All right. Great job, Demon, as always.
Okay, folks. That gets us where we need to be, halfway in there. Be sure to follow us on gab.com/Radio Infidel Show. On the other side, big things with Pepe Farms. Grab you some Georgia Sweet Tea. Hit the can. We'll be right back.
I heard you on the wireless back in 52. Lying awake intently tuning in on you. If I was young, it didn't stop you coming through.
And welcome back to the Radio Infidel Show with Jay Pepe Farms Remembers Demon and Black Pepe. Tonight on Big Think, we'll take a little trip away from vaccines, but only a little. As the COVID vaccine death count mounts, as COVID vaccidents litter our roadways, and as the echo of Dr. Fauci's 2017 threat of a, quote, surprise outbreak fades, let's take a look at how government really views its tax slaves with a little trip to the Amazon Chernobyl tonight on Big Think with Pepe Farms Remembers. Our story begins, as many of these sordid tales do, with two Bushes, the Clintons, and a little 1964 Texaco oil deal. Texaco was the exclusive operator of a Rhode Island-sized 1-million-acre oil concession deep in the pristine Ecuadorian rainforest. Oil production in Western countries was becoming much more expensive. The new environmentalism and environmental crisis of the 60s led oil producers like Texaco to rich oil fields in less developed countries where environmental concerns were not as closely monitored. Nonetheless, Texaco signed the concession contract which, along with Ecuadorian law, stipulated Texaco's obligation to use practices that would not contaminate the environment. That's not what Texaco did. Instead of protecting the environment as much as possible when drilling for oil, Texaco deliberately dumped 18.5 billion gallons of formation waters into local waterways, almost 4 million gallons a day at peak production. According to the USGS, formation waters are those volumes of water that exist in the rock formation with the oil and gas and are often produced alongside the oil and gas. Produced waters often must be specially stored and disposed of due to the substances that are dissolved in them. Most productive waters have high levels of salts, and many have high concentrations of heavy metals or even radioactive materials. Knowing how much water could be produced alongside the oil and gas will help resource managers and decision makers know what storage capacity they will have to prepare for. Texaco utilized a documented 916 unlined open-air waste pits with runoff piping into nearby streams and rivers used daily by unfortunate natives whose drinking water and food supply was contaminated with benzene, chromium, heavy metals, and synthetic drilling compounds. Texaco failed to maintain their equipment, resulting in at least 17 million gallons of spilled crude from pipelines and other infrastructure. They would regularly light their sludge pits on fire to make more room, as well as pumping the toxic sludge onto roads to keep the dust down. Under customary oil field practices and various state and EPA regulations, operators are required to do environmental sampling to be sure contamination is not taking place. Although Texaco's budget for its Ecuador operation had a line item for, quote, environmental protection, no money was ever allocated and no testing was ever done. How do we know this? Discovery's a bitch. The case against Texaco became the case against Chevron Texaco after the 2001 buyout/merger, but it was filed in 1993. The Clinton administration allowed now Chevron to play every delaying tactic in the book, and the case was finally heard in October 2003 in the Superior Court of Nueva Loja in Lago Agrio, Ecuador, after it was transferred from a U.S. federal court at Chevron's request. As Amazon Watch retells it, for 10 years, Texaco aggressively sought to block a trial in U.S. federal court by arguing before various U.S. judges that the case should be transferred to Ecuador. Texaco submitted to the U.S. court 10 sworn affidavits from high-level jurists praising the fairness of Ecuador's justice system. Dr. Ponce Martinez, a respected Ecuadorian lawyer and counsel for Texaco, submitted an affidavit to the U.S. court that was typical of the company's approach. It said, quote, "In my opinion, based upon my knowledge and expertise, the Ecuadorian courts provide a totally adequate forum in which these plaintiffs could fairly pursue their claims." Because of the Ponce affidavit and others, and after years of delay in appeals, the U.S. federal judge finally granted Texaco's motion and removed the case to Ecuador, on the condition that Texaco submit to jurisdiction there and be bound by any ruling, stipulations to which the company readily agreed to avoid the embarrassing spectacle of a trial in the U.S. As late as 2007, Chevron argued on its website and in a separate case in federal court in San Francisco that Ecuador's courts represented an adequate forum. Yet in 2005, when it became clear the evidence in the Lago trial made it likely Chevron would face an adverse judgment, the company started to attack the trial process in Lago Arrigo as unfair. It is now clear that no independent court ever would be acceptable to Chevron. Chevron's animating principle is clear. Praise foreign courts when you think you can win, and condemn them when it appears you will lose. So, not only did Texaco / Chevron fail to test for contamination, during discovery it was found that the company made a conscious decision to use Ecuador's Amazon as a dumping ground to lower production costs to the bare minimum. In thousands of pages of internal Texaco memos obtained via discovery in the U.S. phase of the litigation, there is not a single mention of the environmental impact on the indigenous people living in the region. Texaco took no steps to safeguard the locals from its substandard drilling practices. It never informed the people of the location of its waste pits, never put up fences around the waste pits, and deliberately used the local water supply to dispose of the wastes by running pipes from the pits into nearby streams. As Texaco Chevron's fate was being sealed in court, Chevron attempted to shift all blame and liability to its Ecuadorian governmental-run oil partnership, PetroEcuador. Legally, Chevron is being sued for the damages it caused while it was sole operator and for any damages caused by PetroEcuador using the equipment and processes Texaco left behind in 1990 after most of the oil had been extracted. Attempts by Chevron to shift the blame are irrelevant. They're being sued for both. Texaco's own audit of its environmental practices in the early 1990s concluded that spills that occurred after 1990 that were caused by Chevron's, quote, improper equipment design were still the responsibility of Texaco. PetroEcuador is hardly blameless, and Chevron had every right to sue PetroEcuador to recoup some of the damages payout, which they in fact have done. The key here is that Chevron never paid out. Despite being found guilty in the court they begged for, they are still refusing to pay the $9.5 billion in awarded damages to the coalition of approximately 30,000 people from dozens of communities, including the members of five surviving indigenous groups who have lived in the rainforest for centuries, as well as thousands of Ecuadorians who moved to the area in recent decades in search of oil jobs. The Amazon Defense Coalition reported, Texaco immediately launched a classic corporate defense strategy of trying to block the courthouse door to prevent a trial, claiming the forum was inconvenient, even though it was just miles from Texaco's global headquarters. The company also began to lay groundwork to delay the case, promising a, quote, lifetime of litigation should the plaintiffs succeed in securing a trial. That approach has been borne out by 15 years of litigation, a period of time prompted largely by Chevron's strategy of designed delay. The company has also tried to generate political pressure from Ecuador's president and attorney general to try and quash the trial process in Ecuador. It has done the same in the U.S. by trying to enlist the Congress and the USTR to, quote, punish the government of Ecuador on trade issues for letting its citizens exercise their right to trial. Chevron's recent argument is that they are the victim of a judicial farce in Ecuador, driving primarily from the fact the company expects an adverse judgment because of evidence suggesting Chevron's culpability. Ironically, much of the evidence that could be used to find Chevron guilty has been provided by the company's own lawyers and technical team. When the case didn't go their way, Chevron immediately moved their global headquarters to avoid asset seizure. They then launched a vendetta against the lead opposition lawyer.
We turn now to what's been described as the Amazon's Chernobyl. 1,700 square miles of land in the Ecuadorian Amazon, devastated by decades of reckless oil drilling. 10 years ago, Ecuador's Supreme Court ordered Chevron to pay $18 billion for dumping over 70 billion liters of oil and toxic waste into the Amazon. The ruling came in a lawsuit brought on behalf of 30,000 Amazonian indigenous people who'd been suffering since the mid-60s, when Texaco began drilling on their ancestral land. Chevron bought Texaco in 2000. The landmark ruling was seen as a major victory for the environment and corporate accountability. But Chevron refused to pay or clean up the land. Instead of cleaning up the Ecuadorian Amazon, Chevron has spent the past decade waging an unprecedented legal battle to avoid paying for the environmental damage, while also trying to take down the environmental lawyer Stephen Danziger, who helped bring the landmark case. With the help of dozens of law firms, Chevron has ended Danziger's legal career. He's been disbarred. His bank accounts have been frozen. He's been forced to surrender his passport. Steve Danziger has also been under house arrest for nearly 600 days after a federal judge drafted a criminal complaint charges against him for refusing to turn over his cell phone and computer. In an unusual legal twist, the judge appointed a private law firm with ties to Chevron to prosecute Danziger after federal prosecutors declined to bring charges. Many of his supporters see Danziger as a corporate political prisoner. His case is attracting growing attention with the legal world as well as among environmentalists and human rights activists. 55 Nobel laureates, including 10 recipients of the Nobel Peace Prize, have called for an end to the judicial attacks on Danziger. A coalition of groups, including Amnesty International, Amazon Watch, the National Lawyers Guild, and others, recently wrote to Attorney General Merrick Garland asking him to investigate what they describe as, quote, disturbing legal attacks on Danziger.
And although it's a bit late, and this is actually after the date that he's talking about, here's a message from the man himself.
This is much bigger than me. This is an effort by corporate America, particularly the fossil fuel industry, to impose a new playbook on how our court system works so they can attack and silence their critics, so they can continue their planet-destroying pollution practices that are really threatening the existence of everybody. So I'm just a symbol that they want to go after so they can use it as a weapon of intimidation to try to stop this work from happening, to try to discourage and demoralize lawyers and campaigners and human rights advocates, environmental justice campaigners from even doing this work. It's extremely important people stand by me. Tomorrow we have a court date at 10 a.m. at the federal court in Manhattan. We're going to go in there and fight hard for the truth. Beforehand at 8:30, there's a rally just outside the court. Please get there. Roger Waters is going to be speaking, Marianne Williamson, Susan Sarandon, activists from Sunrise, from Extinction Rebellion, and other organizations. It's going to, and plus some of my lawyers. And it's going to be a really important point for us to convey to the court and convey to Chevron that they cannot get away with this. So again, the rally, 8:30 a.m. Monday, tomorrow in New York, Federal Courthouse, Lower Manhattan. The address is 500 Pearl Street. Please come. After the rally, you can go into the courthouse, go up and watch the trial, and bear witness. We need as many people as we can to bear witness to what is really set up to be a travesty of justice.
The case against him claims that he bribed an Ecuadorian judge who's been living the life of Riley on Chevron's ticket ever since. Chevron filed a RICO suit against Danziger in New York City. Although the suit originally sought roughly $60 billion in damages, as civil trials involving monetary claims of more than $20 entitle a defendant to a jury, Chevron dropped the monetary claims 2 weeks before the trial. Sharon Lerner reports, in its statement, Chevron wrote that the company, quote, focused the RICO case on obtaining injunction relief against the furtherance of Danziger's extortionate scheme against the company. Instead, the case was decided solely by Kaplan, the judge, who ruled in 2014 that the Ecuadorian judgment against Chevron was invalid because it was obtained through, quote, egregious fraud, and that Doniger was guilty of racketeering, extortion, wire fraud, money laundering, obstruction of justice, and witness tampering. The decision hinged on the testimony of an Ecuadorian judge named Alberto Guerrera, who claimed Doniger had bribed him during the original trial, and that the decision against Chevron had been ghostwritten. Guerrera was a controversial witness. Chevron had prepped him on more than 50 occasions before his testimony, paid him hundreds of thousands of dollars, and arranged for the judge and his family members to move to the United States with a generous monthly stipend that was 20 times the salary he received in Ecuador. In 2015, when Guerrera testified in an international arbitration proceeding, he admitted that he had lied and changed his story multiple times. According to Chevron, Guerrera's inaccuracies didn't change the thrust of his testimony. For his part, Judge Kaplan wrote that his court, quote, would have reached precisely the same result in this case even without the testimony of Alberto Guerrera. In his statement, Chevron said that Guerrera was relocated to the U.S. for his safety and noted that the court found that the company's contracts with the Ecuadorian judge were, quote, proper and transparent. Lawyers for Doniger said the changes in Guerrera's testimony completely undermined his original bribery allegations, which Doniger has consistently denied. In any case, that evidence emerged after the trial, and an appeals court declined to consider the new information and ruled against Doniger in 2016. Had Doniger been criminally charged with bribery, a jury would have assessed Guerrera's credibility. Instead, in the RICO case, which was civil, the decision about a key witness came down to one person, Kaplan, who chose to believe Guerrera. That choice has set the stage for the legal losses Doniger has suffered since, according to some close watchers of the Chevron case. Yesterday, two Chevron lawyers dropped out of the case as key witnesses against Doniger, presumably because they can't lie under oath. And today, Doniger is in court. He tweeted this morning, "As I head into my Chevron-orchestrated, quote, trial today, after 643 days of house arrest, please never forget what this case is really about. Chevron caused a mass industrial poisoning of the Amazon. Six courts and 29 judges found it guilty," unquote. As I write this, the latest update is that all the courtrooms are full and there is no Zoom access. They are playing the racist card hard with Susan Sarandon up front in her Simpsons jacket with Apu center frame, but that's the game they play. Wait a second here, Susan. Isn't Apu racist? Let me check the book. Oh, wait, never mind. In my never-to-be-a-humble opinion, the race of the affected people in Ecuador is irrelevant. Chevron will poison any poor, gullible people it can get away with to make profit. Today, they've simply just taken it to the next step. We now have multiple mega-corporations ad-blitzing the entire world looking for a place to store their hazardous waste in your arm. Doniger is a cautionary tale, a look into the future for pesky taxpayers that dare to complain that their friends are dying of COVID vaccine or driving vaccident. Nobody has any reason to believe that Pfizer or Merck is going to treat you any differently than Chevron or Marlboro. If Amazon Chernobyl is any measure, it will be 2 years of house confinement for you all. I just don't know if the lockdowns count as time served. And there you have it, Jay. Quick update. Pressed by his lawyer, the private prosecutor, again, it's not federal prosecutors. Chevron hired private prosecutors, just admitted in open court that the private prosecutor, Rita Glavin, has had secret ex parte communications with Judge Kaplan, the judge who charged Doniger and is overseeing the case. As he always suspected, the entire thing is deeply unethical.
Great job, Pepe. And another in one that I did not know. Awesome stuff. Awesome stuff. Let's get your final thoughts. Pepe, final thoughts.
Well, it only remains for me to say thank you to you, Jay, Demon, and BP, for sharing your pain with us tonight. And I'll leave you with this quite interesting tidbit from The Independent. An Army bomb unit was called to investigate a suspicious-looking package outside the Territorial Army unit in Bristol. They blew it up with a controlled explosion, the package, only to discover it was a parcel of leaflets explaining how to deal with suspicious packages. Good night.
Oh, Lord. That was a good one. BP, final thoughts.
Final thoughts are, don't believe the numbers. Whatever they tell you, don't believe the numbers.
Don't believe the number. Demon 26, final thoughts.
Good content, Pepe. I did not know about that one. I learned something tonight. How about that?
Absolutely. Thanks to my co-hosts, Pepe Farms, VP, and Demon 26. Great show. Thanks for listening, folks. If you like the show, please repost. This week's Gab shout-out goes to BB Good. Her Gab poll is at BB Good. Sarcastic. Her follow is at Driving Fast, G, that's G-E-E, at G-E-E, and Mousy Fiona Blase at Sox Alexis. You can find them on Gab. Follow them. Great folks, and they follow back. Join us on Gab at Radio Info Show. Pepe Farms, get us out of here.